A podcast of the cinema.
I tend not to express the name of the show in ways that sound evocative of something else.
Such as?
Linoleum Knife.
Linoleum Knife.
Which is what I just did, and now I'm wondering, what did you mean by that? And the answer is, I don't know. I'm having a conversation with inside my brain right now.
Well, have one with me, please.
Okay.
You're Dave White.
What's the conversation? Oh, yeah, that's the conversation.
Cinema. You're Dave White. I'm Alonzo Duralde. We are film critics. We are spouses, and we do this show.
And we are hungry.
I'm not particularly hungry, but
I'm always hungry.
I guess you are. Okay.
I'm confused, though, about what to make for dinner tonight.
Hmm.
It's Monday. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I have menu planned.
Okay.
But now I'm having second thoughts.
Really?
Yeah.
Because of wherewithal?
I don't know. I was going to have these, there's some vegan dumplings in the freezer, and they got some rice noodles. You know what? I already know what we're going to do. It all comes down to that bok choy that's in the fridge, and it's got to be used up.
There you go.
Oh, it's going to go bad.
You need a ticking clock.
I need a ticking clock. So the ticking clock is the bok choy. The dumplings and the rice noodles will be great with that. I was smart when I planned the menu. Congratulations, me.
You're like an Amblin family film.
I already thought it. I had another conversation with myself in my mind just now.
Well, I'm glad that worked out for you.
It's been a long day.
It has.
Mondays. Listen, I'm thinking once the pandemic is fairly closer to being over,
mm-hmm.
and we no longer have two different family and friend based Zooms to do on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
we can go back to Sunday recording of this show.
Yeah, but I mean, one of those Sunday Zooms is going to be replaced with actual human beings in this apartment that you're cooking for on a Sunday.
Correct, but that's the old schedule, and I'm into it, you see.
Okay.
And the family Zoom, there's no way that they're going to all want to do every Sunday family Zoom once they're all free to go out and do things.
True, although, you know, given that my oldest sister is in Spain, where they're being real slow with the rollout.
Oh, I know, but I'm figuring what's going to happen is that we're going to go down to, every other week or once a month or something. Like, I want the Zoom to continue with the family because it's fun to talk to them every week. I know that sounds wild to a lot of people, but the Duraldes are pretty great, and so you want to talk to them. You want to hang out with them. But I also know that doing that has got us now on a schedule, a pandemic recording schedule, where we are no longer, after like 10 years of recording on Sundays, we're now recording on Mondays just out of
exhaustion,
time capacity,
right?
You know, so.
Doing
this show on a Monday is, it's like jump-starting a bus. Every Monday.
I know there were people who would say that we were like their Monday commute entertainment.
Well, now we're your Tuesday commute entertainment, and, at least for a while.
Right, and who even knows if they're commuting right now? Maybe they're just working
at
home. And it's a
Maybe
moot.
People who weren't commuting are commuting now. You don't know.
I know nothing.
You know more than nothing.
Okay, thank you.
You know one thing.
Thanks.
That's right. Oh, sorry. We have films to discuss.
We do.
We're going to talk about Thunder Force.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about Mafi.
Yes.
We're going to talk about Voyagers,
mm-hmm.
and Time.
Yes.
So four films.
Yes.
I've seen two of the four. Again, been a long week.
Well, let's start with Thunder Force then.
We should start with Thunder Force because it's the
big Netflix release.
It's the big Netflix movie of the week. It's the one that most people will have an opportunity to see, I figure.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a mild amusement.
Which nonetheless represents a big step up from...
Oh, I don't know. What was the name of the last one?
Might be pushing.
What was the name of the last one?
Super Intelligence.
Okay. So here's when I say they in the last one, here's what we're getting at.
Yes.
Melissa McCarthy, big star, very funny. Love Melissa McCarthy.
Oscar nominee.
Twice.
Yes.
All right. She's married to a fellow comic mm-hmm. actor, Ben Falcone.
Yes.
They've been married a long time. He has made several films.
Five.
Okay. He has now made five films starring Melissa McCarthy.
Yes.
Some of them he writes, I guess. Some of them he just directs.
Yes.
He wrote and directed this one.
Yes.
They're not good.
No. The films.
Some are, yeah, no. They, the films,
yes,
are not generally good. I've seen most of them, I guess, at this point.
How did you escape?
Maybe I've seen all five now.
Here's the five.
You got all five in the top of your head? All
right. Uh-huh. Tammy.
Not good, but moments of really funny stuff.
The Boss.
Not good, but moments of really funny stuff.
Life of the Party.
Maybe my favorite.
Really?
I don't know.
Okay.
Not good, but moments of really funny stuff.
Super Intelligence.
The same as the first three.
And now Thunder Force.
All right. I think that they're getting worse. Because I, as much as I disliked Tammy and The Boss and...
Super Intelligence.
No, the one before.
Life of the Party.
Life of the Party. As much as I overall didn't like these films... think they're not good films. Those first three gave me some solid, you know, ha ha, hee, ho ho.
Okay.
All right. Super Intelligence, I think, made me laugh less than those other three. And I maybe chuckled a couple times watching this one. So I don't know what's going on business arrangement that they have.
Yeah, me neither. I feel like I laughed a little more at this one, but only in about the first third. Like, that's where all of my ha-ha-hee-hee-ho-hos came. And
why don't you explain what it's about?
Okay. So, sometime in the world of this film, sometime in the early 80s, the planet was struck by cosmic rays,
yeah,
which gave certain people superpowers. Unfortunately, those certain people were all sociopaths.
Right.
So they have been, you know, a reign of terror. Although...
And they're called the Miscreants. They're
called the Miscreants.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah. Right. Although not such a reign of terror that Earth looks markedly different than ours does.
Right. It seems they do a lot of, like, robbing of convenience stores. Like, I'm
petty
not,
vandalism.
I'm not... it doesn't seem like... Like, the first thing you see is them destroying a commuter train.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, oh, no, like, global terrorism.
Yeah.
On the part of these miscreants.
Like, there's no Neil before Zod moment.
Right.
Here, you know, yeah. They're acting like you find out that one of them is trying to win an election while being secret about being a miscreant. It's like, that's not really a power move.
Aren't you more powerful than that? Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so a couple is on that L train in Chicago and dies in the accident. Their young daughter is sent to live with her grandmother. the couple who died were scientists, and they it was their life's goal to figure out a way to give ordinary folks superpowers. And their daughter vows that she will, you know, carry on their work and fulfill their dream.
That daughter grows up to be Octavia Spencer.
Correct.
All right.
While she's in school, she is befriended by big, loud, messy Lydia, who, as an adult, is played by Melissa McCarthy.
Yes. And she grows up to be a forklift operator.
Yes.
Who drinks a lot and
a lot of old style, because that beer gets a ton of product placement in this movie. And Emily grows up to be Octavia Spencer, who is like a super scientist and CEO of some giant corporation.
Yeah.
Lydia goes to Emily's swanky office to try and get her to come to their high school reunion, stumbles into taking the first in a series of injections that were supposed to give Emily super strength. So now Lydia has to do the super strength regimen while Emily takes the invisibility regimen. And then once they are completed with this and imbued with these powers, they fight the miscreants as Thunder Force.
They name themselves Thunder Force. They have a great purple Lamborghini. And they, surprise, they win in the end.
Yeah.
As Thunder Force. Along the way, some things are mildly amusing. Nothing is especially side-splitting.
No.
Nor is anything especially offensive or memorable. It's an inexpensive-looking film. Everything looks like it was done kind of on, you know, one soundstage.
Yeah, there's a lot of lazy pop culture references that don't really quite translate into being jokes. Some of them kind of do. There's a bit where they bring up Nell, which I thought was funny just because no one has talked about Nell in the last 20 years.
The film Nell, starring Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
There's a La La Land reference
that is
sequence that is funny, where Melissa McCarthy and Jason Bateman, who is a miscreant.
Yes.
And is named the Claw.
No, the Crab.
The Crab, sorry. And he has giant crab claw arms.
Yeah.
They dance, and it's, you know, it's like the dance sequence from La La Land where they're spinning around in the...
When they're floating around the planetarium.
The planetarium, yeah. And that's funny and actually sort of sweet and romantic, and you wonder why... You spend a lot of time wondering why this just can't be as good and funny as you know that Ben Falcone and Melissa McCarthy are.
Well, that's the thing. He is, I think, a very talented comic performer. You know, his repartee, his back and forth with McCarthy in movies has been funny. He's been funny in movies without her.
Yep.
But as a filmmaker, I don't get it. I don't get what the two of them think they are creating for themselves, apart from obviously success. I mean, their movies more often than I think have been at least profitable. They keep getting, they have like, this is, I think, the first of their big Netflix deal.
Okay.
You know, so like people keep hiring them as a package deal. And I don't know if it's just that they want to hire her so much that they will accept that he comes attached as her director, because no one's looking at these movies and saying, ah, yes, this is Melissa McCarthy at her best. This is Melissa McCarthy's best films. No, her best, and just putting aside like the dramatic work, stuff like, you know, Can You Ever Forgive Me? Her great comedy work is with Paul Feig.
Right.
And for whatever reason, she doesn't want to make those movies anymore. She wants to make these movies with her husband. And the movies that she makes with her husband aren't good.
Here's what I think happens. I think that when you work with your spouse...
Mm-hmm. Yes. Where's this going?
When you work with your spouse, mm-hmm. when you are in business together...
Yes.
You need to be as thoughtful as you can be about what is a good idea and what isn't. You need to listen to people around you who have the guts to say, you know what? No to that. That's not a good idea.
Is anyone telling her that?
Well, here's the thing. You and I are, you know, teensy tiny little journalist podcasters.
Yes.
All right. no one's afraid to tell us no.
Certainly.
No one's afraid to say, you know what, y'all, that sucks and you should do something different.
We don't even have to ask and they'll tell us.
Right. But I think when you get to be a big, you know, power machine in the entertainment industry.
Yes.
I think people are afraid to tell you no. And when you show people your new film that you didn't consult with anybody on, and you didn't have anyone help you write it, you didn't knock ideas around with anyone else except yourselves. I'm not saying they did this, but it feels like they did.
Mm.
I think that what happens is you show that movie to your friends, and they're like, it's great, you're so funny, ha-ha, yay. And I wish that because they are so potentially good.
Yes.
I have seen basically every movie she's been in, and I know that she can knock it out of the park, and so can he.
Yeah.
But now the output is officially erratic. There is no guarantee walking into a film starring her
that and directed by him.
Well, there's more chance that directed by him and starring her, it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, there's no guarantee, period.
Sure.
That what you're going to get is high quality. And it bums me out because I want her to win.
Yeah.
You know, I want Melissa McCarthy to own Hollywood.
Yeah.
I also want her to be honest, you know, with her product. And I...
Because it's one thing when you look at somebody's career and you're like, oh, what agent is giving them advice? What studio is pushing them into a thing?
Right.
Clearly, they are the masters of their domain. Like, they are a package deal. You get the two of them together. They are in charge of their own destinies. And this is what they're making.
It bums me out. It's the kind of film I would watch on the couch if I were sick so that I could kind of doze in and out of it.
Sure.
And then forget that I saw it because I'm drinking NyQuil or whatever.
You know, the fact that, like, this is Bobby Cannavale's second film in a row with them makes me feel like they've got some kind of Sandler thing going where their friends get paid well, don't have to, like, put, you know, I bet they're like, in at 9 and out at 6.
Yeah, they got kids.
Yeah. It's very chill. Home. And it's like, and if the movie sucks, whatever, I got paid nice for it and I got to hang out with my buddies for a couple of weeks. And, you know.
I wish that the imagination that is running wild right now between us about, like, how these films get made and who does it. I wish that weren't maybe probably true.
Yeah.
But I have this gut feeling that it might be kind of probably true. And I could be 100% wrong. Maybe they're giving it their all, and sometimes you just don't do it right.
Yeah.
You know? God knows.
It's as easy to make a bad movie as a good one.
We work hard trying to, you know, do our jobs, and sometimes we are...
off the mark.
Off the mark. Sometimes we're not thoughtful. Sometimes we're dumb. Sometimes we're not, you know, entertaining. Any of the things that you want writing or podcasting to be. Sometimes we're none of those things. And we're always trying, you know.
Am I the Ben Falcone that's holding you back?
But here's the thing. We're also not getting paid millions of dollars.
No, we're not.
And so I think if you're getting paid that much money, you have to actually try harder.
Yeah. The effort should be equivalent.
It should be more trying.
It should be proportional.
That you watched Mafi.
Yes.
And is that streaming somewhere right now?
Oh, yes, it is rentable.
Thunder Force is on Netflix.
Yes, it is.
That's what you need to know there.
Mafi is being released by IFC. I think it might be in theaters in some places, but you can rent it on, like, iTunes and Amazon.
All right.
All the places. And this is a film that I saw for Outfest either last year or 2 years ago. Who knows?
Moffie is how the title is spelled.
That is an Afrikaans slur for gay people.
Is it?
It is.
Oh.
Which I thought would be reason enough to get you to watch it, but, you know, I know you had a busy week.
Well, you know, I love slurs about gay people. I collect them.
Indeed. It is written and directed by a filmmaker named Oliver Hermanis, based on a book by André Carl de Mandery. There's a lot of Dutch names in this film that I'm going to butcher, so I might just bleep right over them. But it's because it's set in South Africa in the early 1980s.
Any Dutch listeners? Alonzo is very offensive, and we're sorry.
I apologize. Look, I've been Alfonso Durante my whole life. I get it. It's hard.
Oh, you've been Orlando. Your last name has been Durudy, Dufresne, Dulcimer.
So yeah,
anything goes.
I'm basically I'm doing the Dutch people a favor by not trying to say any of these. Yeah, so it's set in South Africa in the early 80s. There is the draft. When you are 16 and above, you have to go join the army.
Right.
And you are more than likely going to get sent to the border with Angola.
Now, this is taking place in the 80s, right?
Early 80s, yeah.
Okay.
Like 81, 82.
But has that changed? Is there still compulsory military service in South Africa?
I don't know.
You don't know.
But,
okay.
But obviously, this is very much a period piece about apartheid.
Yes.
And so, you know, we follow this young recruit who gets shipped off to basic training. It is nightmarish and torturous and all this stuff. And, you know, there is just this level of racism and nationalism that just sort of permeates everything.
Yes.
And then on top of that, he is in the closet.
Right.
And of course, you know, you see like a couple of cadets who get caught together and they are like beaten savagely by their cohort. So there's like you're getting this firsthand look at all of this horror, and at the same time, you know that as bad as it is for everybody, it's even worse for our protagonist because he's also carrying around, you know, the stuff that he's dealing with in a country where it is illegal.
Right.
You know. So, yeah, it is really intense. But you know, it's not just like this sort of constant, you know, horror show. You know, you do really come to understand and care about the characters. And you know, I think that it's very easy for audiences in other countries and in the 21st century to look back at this as like, oh, you know, this awful time and place. And it was an awful time in that place. But I think that some version of this continues to unfold.
Of course.
Everywhere. Yep. You know, I think about, you saw Joyeux Noël, right?
Which one was
that? The film about the 1914 Christmas Day truce during World War I.
Yes.
If the film opens and you see like a German classroom, a French classroom, and a British classroom, I think, where they're basically just already as young children being indoctrinated, that like their nation is great and the other nations are all awful.
Right.
You know, and so you've got like this whole thing where you have a right-wing government who is facing off with Soviet-backed forces. You have white South Afrikaners who are being trained to fight against black Angolan soldiers.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's just the you know, and then obviously this undercurrent of everything about this intense machismo and you know, anti-LGBT sentiment.
Structural racism and structural homophobia.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you. But yeah, it's a beautifully put together film. There is as you pointed out as I was watching it, there's a volleyball sequence that somehow marries Top Gun and Beau Travail. but yeah, it's really quite powerful.
Are they playing volleyball?
They are playing volleyball.
Okay, yeah. When I walked through the living room, I saw they were doing some sort of exercise in slow motion to opera, and I was like, oh, somebody watched Beau Travail. And then you said, Top Gun. Claire Denis watched Top Gun.
Maybe she did.
Never misses a trick, does he, Alonzo Duralde?
You don't know.
Never misses an opportunity to badmouth Beau Travail.
Maybe Beau Travail was originally going to include Kenny Loggins' Playing with the Boys, and somebody was like, Claire, that's a little on the nose. Well, I know.
Tell you what you
are
doing
right
now.
Let's put some classical music in
so
Dave White types will be like, ooh, what an artist you are.
You are riding into the danger zone is what you're doing right now.
You take my breath away.
Damn right.
So I saw Mafia, and then I also saw Voyagers, which is opening, which is playing exclusively theatrically. But before I get into that, we have a message from our sponsor.
Yep. Guess who our sponsor is?
Could it be, oh, I don't know, Amber Petty?
You hit it right on the head right there with
ding,
the
ding,
Amber.
Ding.
Are you curious about turning your ideas into paid stories? I mean, not all of your ideas.
No.
Some of your ideas are...
Should be kept to yourself.
Should be kept to yourself. Exactly. Hidden under a... Take it.
Just for you to enjoy.
Put it in foil, wrap it up in foil, and bury it in the backyard. Like at the end of Todd Haynes's Donnie Gets Spanked.
Just read the box.
But maybe some of your ideas are worth turning into stories. Amber Petty will tell you which ones
Yes. They
are. Go to her
free
workshop. It's called The 3 Key Steps to Becoming a Freelance Writer. You will learn what you need to get started, what to do if you have no samples, and a little thing you can do right away to start making money from your writing.
Hmm.
It will certainly be the most fun Zoomlance writing workshop of April 2021.
Well, all right then.
The first workshop is Thursday, April 15th at 5:30 p.m. Pacific. That's not going to work for you? There's some more later on this weekend. Go to amberpetty.com/linoleum. amberpetty.com/linoleum. There's no code required. No money required. No shoes. No shirt. It's
maybe
fine.
A shirt. Come on.
Oh, wait, it's a Zoom.
It's a Zoom. You wear a shirt.
Depends on the Zoom.
I'll have I'll have the link in the show notes.
Okay.
So Voyagers is for all intents and purposes, it's Lord of the Flies in space.
Did they make it in space?
They did not. I think they made it in Romania. But they figure out a way to make the claustrophobia, like, there's a point to it, or at least, you know, it's sort of baked in. So what happens is, you know, it's the near future. The world is, you know, falling apart, and we have
found... You don't say.
Yes, exactly. We have found a planet that will you know, support human life. However, that planet is 86 years away, which means that if they send a crew up there, it's going to be the crew's grandchildren that actually land at their destination.
Right.
And because, you know, people would just get so, like, claustrophobic and to rip people away from the Earth for that long would just be barbaric. So what they do instead is they basically breed a genetically, you know, awesome... I don't know what the word here is. They get a lot of
terrarium babies.
Yes, so a lot of scientist DNA to make these babies, and these babies stay indoors all the time. They are raised in a thing that looks a lot like what the spaceship's going to look like, so that
right.
they won't miss sunshine or rolling hills or any of that stuff.
And they're going to have to stay in space because if they go back to the Earth, their bones are going to be brittle, like they're made of candy. Because they've been conceived in space where the gravity is different.
No, that's...
Then if you have to have surgery, you have to have floating gravity. No gravity surgery.
With Gary Oldman.
It's a mess.
That's their different plot, different movie. They're born on Earth, so they don't have the candy bone syndrome. At the last minute, Colin Farrell, who's been kind of running the program and is like the closest that these kids have had to a father, decides, what the heck, I'm going to go with him.
Right.
And we get... years go by and you get all these sort of very attractive young 20-somethings in space wearing their, cool black sportswear separates uniforms.
They're all in their 20s-ish.
Yeah.
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 Right.
And, they're all very focused and very chill. And it turns out the reason they're so focused and so chilled is because there's something in the...
drugged their entire life.
Exactly. There's something in this liquid that they drink that, like, is basically the scientific version of saltpeter. Like, it diminishes their emotions.
It's new no-boner insure.
Exactly. Well, one of them, played by Ty Sheridan, figures out that there's something in the blue juice.
Okay.
And so he and his buddy, played by Finn Whitehead from Dunkirk,
all right,
decide to stop drinking it. And suddenly they're alive. And they're like, you know, they're full of testosterone and, yeah, and you know, they're wrestling and whatever.
Okay, this sounds hilarious. I might need to watch this.
And then, you know, everybody else.
Because this guy, Neil Berger, who yes, made this movie, he also made Limitless, which is bonkers.
Yes.
So are you telling me that maybe I should ought to look at it?
I found it kind of bonkers, yeah. So basically everybody stops drinking the stuff and chaos reigns on the ship because it's like this explosion of hormones all of a sudden.
All right.
Yeah. People are kind of poo-pooing this movie. I found it really kind of entertaining.
Okay.
Because I thought it was a cool premise where you have, like, science has planned this whole thing and they didn't take into account this one glitch in the system, which is that, oh, wait, what if they start acting like actual human beings during all yeah, this? It doesn't completely, like, get it across the finish line. Like, it definitely, I think, cops out on an ending that sort of, you know, doesn't jibe with what it's had to say up till then about humanity and the way we behave and
right,
and what happens when our worst instincts take over.
Yeah.
But I was entertained. I kind of dug it.
Okay. Where do I, let's say
mm-hmm,
that I decide to watch this instead of the new Christy Puyu film, which is 3.5 hours long.
Well, you would have to go to a theater to see this.
Oh, I can't stream this?
Not yet.
Well, I'm only half vaccinated right now. I can't go to a movie theater and watch this thing.
Well, I would not say you should run out to the house.
I haven't gotten my second Dolly Parton vaccine yet.
Yes.
Well, fine. I guess I'm not seeing this movie. Does your publicist link still work?
No, I believe it.
I'm asking for special privileges right now. No, it doesn't work anymore.
When I watched it, I said, hey, you would enjoy this. And then you're like, I've got 48 things to do.
I did have 48 things to do.
So that's where we are.
But Voyagers wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So what if it's still in theaters like 8 weeks from now?
That will be a miracle. Or it will have to do with like how little is coming out. Like somebody's still yeah, holding on to Voyagers.
Yeah.
Because it.
No, but you know what's going to happen when the movie theaters really open up? All those things that got released that were supposed to be big,
mm-hmm,
they're putting them right into movie theaters.
I guess.
Wonder Woman. you name something
yeah,
that got put onto streaming and just sort of got like a little bit of a theatrical. They're going right back into the theater.
Everyone's
going
to be showing First Cow.
I would love that, because I would love to see First Cow on a big screen.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to see First Cow on a big screen.
It was the last movie I saw in a theater.
Maybe they'll bring back Vitalina Varela to all of the AMC
there, yes,
theaters.
Absolutely.
And I can get some mozzarella sticks and a grape soda and watch the best film of 2020.
I would be shocked if Voyagers was in theaters in 8 weeks, because literally I think it got positive reviews from me and Christy Lemire and one or two other people. Like, people are not digging this film, so oh well.
Maybe they didn't drink the right drink.
There you go. And then finally, in our attempt to catch up on the major Oscar stuff that we have not seen.
What have we still not seen? We're fixing to talk about Time.
We haven't seen My Octopus Teacher.
All right. Or
and then some of the internationals.
Some of the international stuff we haven't seen yet.
We haven't seen Better Days or Quo Vadis Aida.
Quo Vadis Aida, I hear, is good.
Yeah.
Are there any other documentaries that we still haven't watched? Besides My Octopus?
I think this might be all. I don't know. I have to look now.
Is My Octopus Teacher the one about somebody who kind of like falls in love with an octopus?
Or something like that.
I mean, do they?
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, an octopus does have 8 arms to hold you, so. Yeah. Could you blame? Sexy, sexy octopus.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
You don't have to look it up right now.
Oh, The Mole Agent. We haven't seen The Mole Agent. We haven't seen Notturno.
Notturno, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we did watch Time.
Yes.
From director Garrett Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
It is the story of a woman named Sybil Fox Richardson. Quite often you hear her calling herself Fox Rich because she does speaking engagements and often uses, you know, that abbreviated version of her name in the speaking engagements. When she was young, she married a man. Her husband's name is Rob. And they, you know, got married. They had like two kids. And then she becomes pregnant with twins. And then their business starts to go down the toilet.
Yeah.
And they become desperate. And they don't know what to do. And they wind up robbing a bank.
Yeah.
And both of them receive prison sentences.
Yes.
Sybil's is shorter because she accepts the plea deal.
Yeah.
She gets a 12-year sentence. She serves, I don't know how many years of the 12-year sentence, but it's a short amount of time.
Like under 2 years.
Compared to the 12-year that she was given. Unfortunately, Rob is given a 60-year sentence, which is insane.
Without the possibility of parole or probation.
Right. Why? I don't know. Every state is different, and every state in the United States also is guilty of the following stuff. More black people per capita and people of color per capita are in prison than white people, although the rate of crime across the races is basically the same.
Yeah.
People of color also receive longer sentences.
Yes.
These are statistics that are true. The prison system, the policing system in the United States, both of them are predicated on post-Civil War white supremacy, and that's where it began. Watch 13th.
I was going to say, if you haven't seen 13th on Netflix, do.
So this is the situation. So Sybil spends 20 years, like, fighting to get his sentence reduced and to get him out. And that's what the film is. About half of the film is archival footage that she filmed on her own camera. And then the rest of it is, you know, contemporary footage of what she's going through now to try to get her husband out of prison.
And
he's in Angola. They live in New Orleans.
Yeah. I would say it is as much about also her raising their children.
Yes.
On her own while trying to get him out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And doing an amazing job. Like, you see these kids grow up and they are succeeding and they are achieving. And, you know, like, for a single mom, incarcerated dad, like, they themselves talk about how they are defying the odds. They are defying the statistics. And if we're fuzzy on things like how long she was in prison and the order of the sons, the movie is told in a very elliptical kind of way, which is very effective. And I think keeps this from feeling like, you know, a news magazine segment about a woman's fight against the justice system. It is about this family.
Yeah.
It is about these relationships. It is about, you know, while also being about the big issue topics.
There's an immediacy and an intimacy to the filmmaking that separates it from the pack of
advocacy.
Sort of advocacy documentaries where you're shown archival stuff, you're shown, you know, news stuff, you're given talking head interviews.
There's no courtroom footage.
No.
Here, you know.
No. So it's a very sort of beautiful story about a family that's struggling to survive and to bring home dad.
Yeah.
Do we spoil it or is it, I mean, it's news how it all worked out. Can we just talk about how it works out?
I think probably you've heard about the film. You know how it comes out.
Okay. Well, they...
He gets out.
He gets out at the end. They get him out.
Yeah.
And it's because she is relentless.
Yeah.
There's an interesting moment in the film where I guess it's one of the lawyers. There are so many Wiseman-esque touches in this film where people aren't immediately identified, where you're just like, okay, I'm going to context clues who you are and why you're part of this scene. There is a man who I assume is a lawyer saying to her, it is quite possible, and I'm paraphrasing here, it is quite possible that you are going to keep running into trouble judges and people.
Parole boards,
because you come in and you assert your right. You don't come in begging for a favor.
Yeah.
You come in saying, this is unjust. This is wrong. He's been in 20 years. It is inhumane to keep this man in prison for 60. That's cruelty. That's for the sake of it.
Yeah.
And she is confident in her rightness. And when she walks in, the lawyer guy is saying, you know, they don't want to hear that from you. They want to hear, please, please, please.
Yeah.
And then her mom says basically the same thing. Her mom is actually advising her, be shy and quiet and, you know, wear flat shoes and don't...
Flick your hair in their faces.
Don't storm into the place demanding things. Yeah. And then the mother's like, she doesn't listen to me. And over the course of the film, you're like... You're right. She shouldn't listen to you. She's getting it done because she's not going to be told that she's wrong.
And seeing her evolution over the course of the film from like those early videos to the like power businesswoman speaking to audiences, you know, like selling her, you know, there's a whole thing where she's shooting this video where she's kind of selling herself as somebody who wants to sell you a car.
Right, because she works for a car dealership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you see the strength in her that has accrued over this time of having to like, you know, be engaged in this fight with the system. It's a really beautiful film, and it is a film that is as interesting formally as it is in the story that it's telling.
Absolutely.
We talk about a lot like that. Yeah, obviously it takes your documentary a long way if you show up to the table with a really great story to tell. But if you here, you've got a story and then you've got a filmmaker who really knows what to do with the footage that she's gotten from Sybil, the stuff that she shot herself, and the results are really gorgeous.
And I know there'll be some of y'all listening who are thinking, well, what sort of punishment should armed robbery get? And I'll tell you something. I don't know the answer. Here's what I do know. That it is a very serious crime. Back in the day, I worked at a record store in Fort Worth, Texas. And I worked every Sunday. And one Sunday in 1995, I took the day off to hang out with Alonzo Duralde. And the guy who took my place that day was the lone employee in the store when an armed robber showed up. He was duct taped to the sink in the back employee bathroom. He was otherwise unharmed, but the guy had a gun that may or may not have been loaded, and the guy ransacked the place after duct taping my coworker to the sink. I think about that to this day. It was a random moment. I could have been there. I should have been there. I just decided I wanted the day off, and I got my coworker to take my place. Had I been there, I guarantee you, I would have been traumatized by a gun in my face. There is a moment in the film where Sybil goes to talk to, you don't see it on camera, but she talks about how she goes to the women that were working in the bank that day to ask their forgiveness.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there was an idea on her part of some sort of restorative, you know, restorative situation where she could apologize and tell them she was sorry. I also know that in other countries, European countries in particular, prison sentences across the board are shorter. Even if you murder somebody. And in this bank robbery, there were no injuries. There were not shots fired. So do I have the answer on what kind of punishment a person who commits armed robbery should get? I do not. I am not a legal expert, and I don't know what I have some friends who are deeply into the, you know, prison abolition movement, and I don't know what they would advocate for in this situation.
But we can say that the prison system in this country is broken.
Yes, exactly. But we can say that exactly what you just said. The situation as it is now is meant to destroy people.
Yeah.
Regardless of the gravity or victimlessness of the crime.
Yeah. Specifically to destroy black men.
Yeah. Therefore, we're pro this movie.
Yeah. It's streaming on Amazon Prime. It is nominated for Best Feature Documentary.
Yeah.
What's your DVD pick this week?
I have one.
Okay.
Preparations to be together for an unknown period of time.
Oh, yes.
Hungarian film from Lily Horvat.
That we reviewed not that long ago.
It was streaming and in virtual cinemas not all that long ago. In fact, earlier in 2021.
Yeah.
But now it's actually out on DVD. You can get a physical copy of it, and you should watch this one. It is about a neurosurgeon named Marta. She falls in love with another doctor at a medical conference.
In New Jersey?
In New Jersey, where she is working, although she is Hungarian. She decides to uproot her existence, go back to Budapest, meet the guy that she fell in love with, and when she gets there and meets him, he says, "We've never met." That's the first 10 minutes of the film. And what happens after that is mysterious and wonderful and yes, funny and weird and kind of like almost like a thriller, because you're like,
what's happening?
What's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? And yeah, I can't say enough great things about it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great movie. Mine is terrible, but in a fun way.
Okay.
Hercules and the Captive Women.
All right.
There is a new Blu-ray out. Someone decided we need to do a 4K restoration of a Reg Park Hercules movie.
How many Ks are you actually allowed for a film like this?
I would say no more than two, but no, they went all four. But what I think is fun about this is that I remember when Mystery Science Theater 3000 was on the air, it used to annoy certain producers. Like, you know, Sandy Frank, most legendarily.
Well, you know, especially when they write a song about you.
Exactly. All right. But they would be mad that their precious films were being mocked on this dumb puppet show.
And chopped up.
That too.
Yeah.
But anyway, we've now reached a point where people are really embracing this. And so featured on the Hercules and the Captive Women Blu-ray is the entire Mystery Science Theater 3000 episode where the film and a new introduction from TV's Frank Conniff.
Cool. I've never seen this in its entirety or the MST version.
Oh, well then. It is a Hercules.
I'm not a completist about MST like you have been in your life.
Yeah, well,
you know, joining the fan club, getting the VHS tapes of the little shorts and stuff. You're in it. You've been in it to win it for a long time with the MST.
It was a dominant aesthetic of my early adulthood.
Oh, you and I used to, when we first started hanging out, we used to watch it together all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still do now that we watch the Netflix stuff. And I'm not saying I'm over it or I don't like it anymore.
Right. You're just not as cuckoo as I am.
No, I've always been a fan, but you've been a super fan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Incidentally, Joel wants to do another season and just started a Kickstarter for it. So,
Where, for Netflix or?
I don't know.
I see.
I mean, maybe if they go for it. I think the Kickstarter means he can just sort of make it the way he wants to make it and then shop the finished product.
Got it.
But yeah, I think I put a link on the...
Mary Jo Peel or nothing.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm saying that right now.
I think there's a link on the Facebook page that I put to that, if you are so inclined. So yeah, we have some letters.
Do we indeed?
Oh, but before that, I want to remind people that we have a Patreon page.
We do. I'll tell you a thing. I'll tell you all about it. You can go to the patreon.com/linoleumknife and you can decide that you would like to subscribe to our extra content. What is that extra content? Well, I'm going to tell you. Hang on. Okay. My brain evaporated for just a moment. Each day of your life, well, not every day of your life, but
each business day,
many days of your month, you're going to get LKRX. Get it? RX. We're prescribing cultural things to you. You also get a show called Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife from films across the spectrum of movie history.
Yes.
From the silent era to now, where we pick one, we talk about it for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
You get LKTV, where recently we spent an entire episode talking about Anne Murray's 1983 Canadian television special, Anne Murray's Caribbean Cruise.
With our good friend Dennis Hensley from yes. Dennis and Noon with Dennis Hensley.
Then you can also get Linoleum Knife and Fork, where we talk about how good I am at baking carrot cake.
Among other topics.
Also, you can get Linoleum Nights, where we recently ranked our favorite Academy Award winning best song winners.
Yes.
And we are correct in our opinions.
We also have monthly club meetings where we all gather on Discord and watch a stream a movie together.
On a Saturday night.
Yes.
Because what else are you doing?
Yeah.
Nothing. Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
That's right.
Linoleum knife, not linoleum?
Yeah. Linoleum knife.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
All one word.
We're selling it. If you want to buy it, that's where it goes.
There you go.
That's where you go.
Yeah.
The end. Oh, letters.
Letters. You don't get off that easy, mister.
Topher the Elder. Hey, Dave. When were you at movies.com? Too long. He says, I operated the site from November of 2005 until I sold it to Fandango in 2008. Well, that's when I started. I started in 2005. Mm. And I finished in 2015.
Wow.
Yeah. He continues, funny story. One of the key ways we monitored the site was that we had a program that watched the log files looking for the word failure as a key to page someone to fix the site. We would ingest movie times. Ingest? Okay. We would ingest movie times every 30 minutes. Well, then, Matthew McConaughey came out with a little movie called Failure to Launch. Suddenly, we were getting paged every 30 minutes every time we updated the movie times. But there was nothing wrong with the site. It took us a couple of hours to diagnose that. Fun times. Well, you know what? I had to watch Failure to Launch. So
it's even.
It's not a funny story at all that I had to watch Failure to Launch.
That's like when I worked at The Advocate and we had the news editor would have like a Google alert for the word gay for, you know, news items.
Right.
And then the year Marsha Gay Harden won the Academy Gay Award.
Harden. And Gay Talese,
well,
whatever he was doing.
He didn't come up so much, but Marsha Gay Harden really choked up the feed for a couple of months there.
Robert says, hey, Alonzo and Dave, Collective opened in Australia this week, and I was really keen to see it following your glowing review. They say keen in Australia when they're really excited about something. They're keen to do something.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's nice.
It is.
I like the way people in Australia talk. I barely understand it if I'm watching a film like, oh, say, Starstruck, where I need the subtitles.
Right.
But it's delightful. Being in Australia, our handling of COVID has been competent on the whole. The rollout of the vaccine is an entirely different story. Our conservative prime minister promised 4 million vaccine shots by April and has delivered 600,000. This is the same prime minister who lied about going on holidays to Hawaii when the country was on fire in 2019. Yeah. In Australia, we've been able to go to movie theaters since midway through last year, which made the experience of watching Collective with an audience akin to the excitement of an opening night of Star Wars. Instead of cheers and applause, it was a chorus of exasperated sighs and disgust whenever another act of corruption occurred. I've written a number of letters over the years, expressing my love for the show. I'm so thankful for being turned on to Collective. A similar film could be made in Australia about the current government and any of their punitive policies. Oh, well, yeah, the United States,
oh,
too.
Oh, for sure.
Just FYI. Yeah. Recently, they settled a class action lawsuit out of court for a program called RoboDebt. That just sounds horrible on its face.
Yeah.
Like, whoever invented that name was like, let's just call it what it is.
Let's give people nightmares.
Yeah. RoboDebt, which illegally sent notices to people receiving Social Security demanding that they pay back debts that were falsely issued. To date, no one has been held accountable for the program. One of the many things I love about the film Collective is the ending. I wasn't prepared for its abruptness, but as I think on it, I find it to be perfect. It brings the emotion back to where it should always be, the people. The choice as the family drives away from the cemetery was as emotionally affecting for me as when Dave describes the rhythm of the night that ends Beau Travail. Two Beau Travail references in one podcast.
Drink.
There you go. I also recently watched 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days. Wow, you're like...
Ooh, wow.
You're
going for the hard ones.
Yeah. Pump the brakes. Like, watch something fun.
Yeah. Gentlemen prefer blondes, perhaps.
I'm keen to check out The Death of Mr. Lazarescu soon as well. What other films from the Romanian New Wave would you recommend? Are there any films that are good places to start that I haven't mentioned?
I think a really good one to start with, and you already have started, obviously, if you've watched 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, but in general, if you are thinking, I want to get into this Romanian New Wave thing, what's a good place to step in? I would recommend The Whistlers.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to sort of ease into it.
Yeah.
You don't want to go full Sierra Nevada, like, right off the bat. You know, I think maybe, you know, do a movie where, like, it's not all shot in a city where everything is the color of concrete. You know, you do get the Canary Islands in this one. And in addition to getting, you know, what's going on in Romania. But that's from Corneliu Porumboiu.
Thanks for killing it.
I know.
All right, here's the thing about The Whistlers.
Who did 1208 East of Bucharest and he wrote 1208 East of Bucharest and he wrote Police Adjective.
Yes. He is also the director of 1208 East of Bucharest and Police Adjective and the film that I would start with, The Treasure.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Infinite Football.
Well, I would then go on to Infinite Football.
Okay.
He is the filmmaker who gives you, in general, a softer place to land, I think.
That's fair.
And you're going to be, I think, better off with The Whistlers after you've seen Police Adjective. Because the Whistlers is kind of a sequel.
Yes.
To Police Adjective.
But, I mean, it's not like if you watch The Whistlers without having seen Police Adjective, you're not going to know what's going
on. Right, you'll get it. But, yeah, I'm going to say, if you, listen... Nothing we say is real right now because you've already watched 4 weeks, 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, and Collective. So you've gone for the hardest, toughest sits
right
of everybody at the moment. Even The Death of Mr. Lazarescu, which is a comedy.
Has some bleak comedy to it.
It is a bleak comedy. It doesn't just have some.
Right.
It is a bleak comedy.
These are the laughs that come out with a cloud of dust that emerge from your throat.
But now that you've seen Collective, you'll understand...
The satire about the healthcare system in Romania that's going on in Lazarescu. Graduation is also...
Graduation is good.
Which is also a good portrait of government corruption.
I think my favorite... My two favorites are Death of Mr. Lazarescu and Sierra Nevada.
Yeah.
Boy, do I love Sierra Nevada. And Sierra Nevada is the funniest of all of them. But it's demanding because it is a 3-hour film with a cast of about 24 people in a small Romanian apartment, and all of them are talking at the same time. So you've got like... a lot of subtitles to read, even though it pulls you along and it's really funny and it's, you know, bitterly funny, but I really love Sierra Nevada.
It's like Robert Altman's A Wedding, where you're like, who are these people? And you're having to figure out whose relationships to what. But it's there. The movie gives you everything you need to know.
Yeah. Christy Puyu, as we just mentioned earlier, has a new film called Momkrog.
Yes.
Which is 3.5 hours long, and it just dropped this past weekend.
We will be getting to it.
Oh, I'm gonna settle right in for that. He's the anti-masker. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? I do not know. All I know is that last year at the film festival, one of the film festivals when Momkrog was, making its debut, he was going off on tangents about masks. He did not like them.
Okay, Christy. Christy, okay.
Yeah, there's... Listen, I'm not responsible for that man. So he just makes movies I like.
I can't believe we still haven't watched, is it Tuesday Before Christmas?
Yeah, I still haven't seen that one.
Yeah, I gotta watch that one.
Finally, Sean has sent us a list to Knife.
Yes.
It's been about 3 years since my first letter to you guys. A lot has changed since the last time I wrote. Notably, I met the love of my life.
Oh.
Got a better job. And my physical media collection has rocketed from 300 films to roughly 600, with more seeming to appear in the to-be-watched piles these days. When the pandemic started, I fell off many of my podcasts. I'm sorry to say LK was one of the many. But as I've gotten acclimated to this new normal, I've slowly reintegrated podcasts back into my life. While catching up with LK, I found myself thinking of a new list to be knifed. I almost want to challenge myself to send you a list of movies that I love that gets 0% knife. Hasn't somebody already done that once before?
I think.
Didn't they send us an intentional list?
Somebody
of like
went out of their
garbage.
Way to movies they knew we didn't like.
For today, I've gathered a list of films with a theme, queerness.
Okay.
Though there are surely more worthy films of a queer canon, the following list are some of the films that speak to me on a queer level. Either textual or subtextual. One of them was even how I met the love of my life.
Well.
Bound.
Oh.
1996.
Love it.
Knowing what we now know about the Wachowskis, this movie hits different.
Mm-hmm.
Simple, sexy, and stylish. Naked Lunch.
Oh,
1991.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Cronenberg has slowly become my favorite director over the past 5 years. The Lighthouse.
You like me lobster.
You're not fond of me lobster.
You're fond of me lobster.
I recall there being some contention that this wasn't a horror film on the episode where you both discussed it. I would say that there is an argument to be made that it is a horror film that deals with the subject of masculinity, repression, mortality, and obsession, which are some of my favorite themes in horror. But we can all agree it is queer.
Sure.
It sure is.
When Dan and I were doing The Old Dark House recently for a film and a movie, he texted me this close-up of Boris Karloff the first time you see him in the movie. And he's like, am I watching The Lighthouse?
Nightbreed, 1990.
Never seen it. Cronenberg is in it, but not... didn't direct it.
When I first saw this film, I had no idea what I was getting myself in for and came away from it thinking that this was the perfect metaphor about younger queer folks coming into an established queer community, making a huge mess by thinking they know better than their elders and being forced to rebuild the community better.
Well, it is a Clive Barker movie, so that's probably what he had in mind.
Carol.
Land that plane, Carol.
They say, it's gay, it's Christmas, it's cozy.
Yeah.
It really is.
It is all of those things.
The Overnight.
Boo.
I'm willing to bet neither of you have seen this film. Actually, we both have seen this film.
Oh, we reviewed it on this program, so don't even come to us with your bets. We'll take that bet.
It used to be on Netflix, but I had to buy my own copy once it was taken down. It's an almost uncomfortable look at figuring out adult friendships, identity, self-doubt, and envy. It goes places I didn't expect, and the emotional honesty speaks to me. We had a different take on it. We didn't.
We are not fans.
We didn't care for it. Capote.
Oh.
Even though this one is a recent film for me, there was a beauty in the pain of it that resonated with me. The chemistry between Hoffman and Collins surprised me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I got to meet Catherine Keener out of that whole true, situation.
True, true.
And that was, let me tell you, a moment like this. It was a dream come true.
I was on the same plane as Dan Futterman and Philip Seymour Hoffman going to Toronto for the premiere of that. Hoffman was in first class. Futterman, the screenwriter, was in coach with me. And now, Sean, you can go watch In Cold Blood.
But I'm a cheerleader. One of the first queer films I ever saw as a teenager. I can't get over the colors, the camp, the small town feeling. It may not be for everyone, but it holds a very special place in my heart. Listen, I am now of the mind that that film really hit it with the kids of its moment.
Yeah, that's definitely a generational divide.
We were older and we were just like, whatever. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, I'm a cheerleader, but we're going to give it to you as a yes on this list.
We are resigned to the fact that it's not going anywhere.
Yeah. Crash.
As long as he means the Cronenberg one, yes.
Back to Cronenberg, can't help it. His work speaks to me. Obscene obsession. Riding the line between sex and death, the constant struggle to reach for the unattainable. I know people find this movie off-putting. Not me. Holy cow. Boy, do I love this movie. One of the best films of the 90s.
Yeah, we need to dig into the new Criterion Blu-ray, all the extras and stuff.
The Favorite.
Hmm.
One of, is probably Lanthimos' most accessible film, but not quite my favorite. I love how the women in this film get to do and say all the things men typically do in films of its type. It hurts so good.
Yeah, like probably my least favorite of the Lanthimos movies I've seen, but I still like it a lot.
I agree with you. Yeah. Listen, Sean, 90% knife.
Yeah.
We just don't like the overnight.
Sorry.
But we're giving you, but I'm a cheerleader, even though neither one of us like that either.
Yeah, yeah. And who knows, 20 years from now, if we keep hearing from people about how great the overnight was, we'll just figure that's another.
Maybe we'll go back and look at it again.
No, we're not doing that, but it'll just be another generational thing. I'm like, no, that, what I didn't like about that movie now, I'm not going to like about that movie later.
All right. Well, you say that now, but maybe 20 years from now, you go back and look at it again. You go, you know what? I have changed my opinions about this thing.
I will bet you that that's not the case.
I'm saying it could happen.
Fine.
Anything could happen. The world is a wild, chaotic place. And your ideas about stuff change.
Sure.
The only thing you're not allowed to change your mind about is me.
I see. Fine.
Run that through your mind. How about that? Yeah.
Well, I still don't like The Shawshank Redemption. I can confirm that.
Oh, come on. It goes to the no. Rock and the moon, the friends.
That movie is a lot of jive.
That movie just needed a horse. That's all. Shawshank Redemption, the only way you can make The Shawshank Redemption more like corny and moving is if you had a horse.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Well, if you want to hear me gripe more about Shawshank Redemption, catch...
And of course you do.
Of course.
Yeah.
Catch this week's episode of A Film and a Movie dropping tomorrow, or Wednesday, rather. Special guest Ben Mankiewicz joins Dan and me to talk about it.
Ooh! Famous.
Yes. We pair it with Brute Force, which I'd never heard of, and it's great.
Wow. Oh, my God. Okay, you guys. We watched this movie, this old Burt Lancaster movie called Brute Force from Jules Dessin.
Yeah, like Burt Lancaster's second movie.
He's young. He's like 20 or something. And it's a prison drama from what, 1947, 48?
47.
Holy effing... Like...
Dave goes, that is the most violent old movie I've ever seen.
It is the most violent old movie I've ever seen. And stunning.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it existed.
Me neither.
Until like
I'd
a
never
week
heard
before we watched it. Holy cow. Find it. Watch
it. It's on HBO Max and the Criterion Channel.
So, oh, my God. Yeah,
do give that a look.
Yeah.
All right. You can also catch me on my other podcasts, Breakfast All Day. I think we're now calling it the Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo Project for the time
being. The Untitled Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo
Project.
Project.
On Maximum Fun.
Yeah.
We're changing.
Are you allowed to say that out loud right now?
I think we can say that.
Okay.
Anyway,
you more just
on,
did.
More on that if you'll tune in. We'll be taking suggestions from listeners for new names of the show during the upcoming Max Fun Drive. And of course, a film and a movie. Check out, see what Bibbs and Whitney are up to over at the critically acclaimed podcast. That's always interesting stuff. Listen to the Schmoes Know, Dennis Enun with Dennis Hensley. Again, our friend Dennis was just on LKTV, and he's always a delight. The Sewers of Paris, The Comics Canon, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Workroom, Big Fat Gay Podcast, The Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts, and won't you leave us a 5-star review? We'll read it on the show and be very appreciative of having gotten it. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Spotify, Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, CastBox, Podbean, Google Play, Amazon Music, you name it. Follow this show on social media at LinoleumCast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And again, of course, our Patreon is patreon.com/linoleumknife, and more information about the Amber Petty seminars in the show notes of this program.
Yep.
Thank you, Amber, for your support of the show. Thanks all of you for listening. We appreciate it, and we'll be back next time with more. Until then,
goodbye.